Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. I hope you're hearing it this week because last week we did have some issues with our feed. Nothing to do with us. It's being looked into. Hopefully you're hearing this one and last week's gets added at some point. If you didn't find last week's, it is available on Spotify and as a direct download thing. I tweeted out. We did it from the IGN UK account as well. It's very findable. You'll find it. Don't worry. You found this one. Congrats. Dale, how you doing?
I'm all right. I guess... Just thinking as well, they could just Google IGN UK podcast. What was it, 649?
It was 649. This is 650.
Yeah, and you find the article with the link straight away. You can get it. You can get it.
We would normally do some sort of live show or special every 50 episodes, but we might have something later in this year that we're teasing, maybe. Who knows? We don't know yet. There might be something. But we have got kind of something special this week because we've got a new voice. We've got another Matt. Matt. Explain yourself. Who are you?
Hi, everybody. Hi, gamers.
He's ruined it already.
Thanks so much for welcoming me on. I'm the UK social coordinator for IGN. I think video games are pretty cool.
Yeah.
Hates movies, hates TV.
If people see any bad tweets, which I would say there's not been any of yet from the IGN UK account, I think there's been an uptick in good stuff. But if anyone does see anything bad, they can blame you.
Fault, absolutely.
Exactly. As usual, we do have some questions for new people on the podcast. And we're going to put you in the hot seat now. And I will restrict you to one on each. And none of this indecisiveness. I want you to tell everyone, Matt. And this is also crucial. Matt with one T. We need one way to separate. Because if, God forbid, there's ever a week where it's one of us and both Matts on the podcast, we're in trouble.
Jesus, yeah.
Nightmare. One of you's going to be Matthew for a week.
I mean, there is also Matt P and
Matt J. One T. We call one T, one titty.
Yeah, sure.
you're okay with that because you're the one T.
I used to work in an office for a little while with three Matts in it. So I was MJ for a little while, and that's kind of stuck with me.
There is someone else who kind of goes by MJ as well, though, isn't there?
Which one? I mean, there's a lot. Yeah. Are you talking Spider-Man? Are you talking
Spider-Man? I was thinking
the
of
the disgraced king of pop.
I was thinking of
Michael Jordan too. That's nice.
Yeah, Michael Jordan. That one. He's a good one. He's a good one. God, there's a lot of them. Mary J. Blige.
Let's pop it.
Matt, what's your favorite game ever? Easy question.
It's for PlayStation 1. It's part of the Mega Man Legends series. It's called The Misadventures of Tron Bonn.
What? It's
I can't tell if that... I think that's a real answer.
It's genuinely fantastic. Like, video games peaked with that.
We've got another Jesse Gomez curveball on our hands, haven't we? Like, somebody just throws out things that you were not expecting.
For anyone...
Everybody that's listening to that loves it has just popped. Like, oh my God, true. Finally some recognition.
True. That is probably one. Why is it so good?
It's kind of every game all at once. It's it's kind of an action adventure. It's kind of a like box stacking game. It's kind of a like delivery service game.
It sounds like Death Stranded.
it's a little bit like an RPG too. Like it's great. Mm-hmm. Like and all of it does really well. And criminally underplayed, unfortunately. But
I'm just looking at screenshots now. You seem to play as some sort of giant mech. Mm-hmm. This would definitely interest. Our other Matt, who is, as we know, a mech perv.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Looking at this, if I played it at the time, I definitely would have been into it.
I
imagine it's quite hard to go back to.
It's still really good. Still absolutely holds up.
What's its Metacritic, mate? That's what we need to know.
Do we need to know?
Yes, I need to know.
I'll find it.
I've got this hope with all the PlayStation Plus classic stuff that they've done. They'll probably put it on the service at some point. So
will Sony deem it a classic?
Fingers crossed.
I mean, it's has it got individual reviews? Because it looks like it was in, was it in the Megaland, was it in like the collection, or did it have?
It's not. Oh, no, here no, we go. Yeah.
We gave it a 7.5 on IGN, which isn't a bad score, but you know. Maybe one day, do you know what? One day we'll check it out. Best film, what's this one? Is this a really obscure one?
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard about this movie. It's called The Prestige.
Oh, is it genuinely your favourite? Yeah.
It's up there, no.
Someone's trying to make a good first impression.
Yeah, it saves me a question after this as well, so I appreciate that. It is good. Are you going with The Prestige? Or?
Sure, we'll put that down.
Let's do that. Easy.
I think that you're being sincere here. Sure, we'll put that down. What's your real favourite film?
It is hard.
Hmm.
Did they make a film of The Misadventures of Trombone?
I've been petitioning them. I'm knocking on Capcom's door every week, and they've yet to accept me or let me in.
TV show. Go on. What's that one?
So I'm not sure about
that. I know you're big into your anime.
I do. I bloody love that anime, don't I? Like, this season, I'm really watching Spy X Family, which is fantastic. Like, even if you aren't an anime fan, I absolutely recommend doing that. But the other show, like the best thing that's been airing this year, is Barry, obviously. Just utterly fantastic.
I am still not on the Barry train. It's one of those I've got on the list. I need to get on it. All I've heard is that it's excellent.
Yeah.
How can you watch it in the UK?
I'm not admitting that.
Okay. Surely there must be some legal way.
I'm sure.
On Sky or something?
There's probably a method.
Now, so if you're one of these people that hates people typing on a podcast, I apologise because I'm typing in. It looks like, oh no, you have to buy it on Amazon.
What? But you can still watch it on Amazon. That's how you watched it, wasn't it, Matt? On Amazon,
yeah,
you paid for it, right?
Yeah. And you can, oh, it's all on, it looks like it's all on Now TV.
Oh, there you
can
go.
Watch it on Now TV. There you go.
Lovely.
Easy. I do really want to watch that because I'm a big Bill Hader fan. And yeah, all I've heard is that it's really, is it just really good dark humour for most of it as well?
Sure, yeah. I think that this season's kind of taken a turn into way more of a drama. Like, there's still comedy to it, but it's decided to flip the expectation. It was definitely a dark comedy to begin with, but now it's very much more a drama about, like, where the first seasons are about this premise of this guy that does murders, but he's also kind of nice. This season is about, like, that mask kind of slipping. And it's like, who would the person that would be doing this actually be?
So it's got a little bit of those like Dexter and Breaking Bad sort of feels to it, I suppose.
Yeah, totally.
Exciting. That is a good recommendation for anyone. I'm you know, not from me, I haven't watched it, but Matt's recommending it. So, you know, it must be good. If you like The Misadventures of Trombone, you'll love Barry.
Same thing. Well, I mean, The Misadventures of Trombone is everything, so there is a little bit of Barry in it.
Exactly. Let's go on to what we actually talk about, because we've got quite a few little things to talk about this week. One not so little is a new Marvel show, Miss Marvel, which has been airing for 3 weeks now, and we haven't spoken about it yet. I think we're all quite positive about this. I think it's been a nice breath of fresh air, because do you know what? I was getting a little bit of that Marvel fatigue after Moon Knight, after Doctor Strange. I thought they were relative low points for Marvel, but Miss Marvel is just a delight, really. And I think the thing that it's something that a lot of people have pointed out is that it's so nice that it has its own visual identity and its own style to it. Like, it reminds me a lot of the Spider-Man PS4 game in its presentation. I just like, it's almost like a bit Edgar Wrighty at times as well, the way they do camera work and some of the edits. There's some technical terms for you. What are you guys thinking?
I've only seen one episode so far, so. But assuming it stays consistent, I agree with you in terms of the style and tone. I think it's really trying to create its own identity, whereas stuff like Falcon and the Winter Soldier and even WandaVision, like they just exist in this sort of really vanilla sort of presentation. It's just like, it's just Marvel story. Whereas this is like, okay, no, we've got this character and it's a young, visually interesting character in terms of like her comic book obsession and what her abilities are, and let's weave that into the presentation of the show, not just in terms of like CGI and stuff, but in terms, like you said, in terms of the camera work and even the dialogue and way actors perform with each other. I'm really, really enjoying it so far. It also did something which is a massive pet peeve of mine, is in films and TV when people are texting each other and you just get little bubbles pop up with the text. And we've just, right, so I'm reading for a bit, am I, now? I just find it a really dull experience. But I thought in the first episode, they do a really like cinematic approach to conveying those text messages between each other by using the environment. And it's such a cool like style touch that I think really demonstrated how much effort they're putting into the presentation.
I think this is one as well that crucially you don't have to be big into the MCU to enjoy it all. It feels like a teen high school thing for most of the time with some superhero stuff thrown in. We're not really gonna spoil much, but I know there's one thing in the latest episode you wanted to point out, Matt.
Yeah, I think that some of the conflicts, because they need to have, you know, some baddies doing stuff, I think that it's a little bit contrived. It seems as if the thing that is propelling the, you know, one side wants this thing and one side wants the other just doesn't seem to really work for me. And without spoiling, you know, I can't get into specific details, but it really did tick me out.
Like, they kind of have to force this sort of villain stuff in there where, you know, you kind of have to, because that's what, you know, superheroes need their villains, don't they? Mm. But at the same time, it's like, I just would be happy watching 6 episodes of Iman Vellani, who's just incredible in this role, just having a really fun time with these new powers.
I guess, would you though? Like, because there needs to be an element of drama, right? And the drama just can't be she's trying to not get caught by her parents. I guess the drama needs to be some sort of conflict and a reason why she's doing these things and what she's going after. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen the second or third episode, so I have no idea what this character this is, but
I'm into it. I just, like I said, it's just it's feel good. Whereas, you know, for the start of Moon Knight, I was really into it. I was big into whatchamacallit, Ethan Hawke's character. Oscar Isaac was great, but then it just kind of really did go downhill for me quite quickly and just turned into another big Marvel fight fest, which I just didn't enjoy. I don't think this one's going to head quite in that direction, I'm hopeful, but I'm just more intrigued to see how, and even if they are going to, I assume they are going to like merge characters like Moon Knight and characters like Miss Marvel into this grander picture, because this seems so unique compared to the other stuff. I don't know how that is gonna mesh in.
Well, Miss Marvel is confirmed that she's in Captain Marvel too.
I'm just wondering how they do that, if it's just a small role, because I don't know, for example, like it worked kind of instantly with Tom Holland's Spider-Man because he fit in but was also kind of like a fresh face, but like within 3 films he's off in space. Like if the next episode Miss Marvel was just thrown in space fighting Thanos, it would seem totally bizarre.
That's true.
But we'll see. I'm hopeful. I feel like this is going to be a good one, and it already is. I mean, we're halfway there, aren't we? So, to quote Bon Jovi, as they do in the show,
it's only 6 episodes.
We're halfway there.
Sorry, I think to interrupt.
Bon Jovi. I've assumed it's only 6.
I think it's,
Is it more? I don't know.
6 does feel like a sweet spot. Well, maybe not sometimes. We'll get
it
to that
6
later.
Episodes. It is 6 episodes. I am not a liar. Yeah, I should have said this at the start. I'm all over the place. We are going to talk about Obi-Wan Kenobi because that's all finished, but we're going to do it right at the end of the podcast after feedback, so we're gonna go full spoilers on that just in case you haven't watched it yet. We don't want to ruin it for anyone, because not that there's too much to spoil, but you know, there's very cool things and moments that happen, and some I'm sure that Dale thinks are less cool that we'll get to.
No, like I said, overall I liked it, right? I just have some issues.
There we go. Let's get to Dale's issues at the end of the podcast.
They're not that big.
Next up, Matt, I know there's a game you can't wait to start just telling everyone they should be playing right now, and that is Neon White.
You gotta check this one out. It's my recommendation of the week. Yeah. So it's a speedrunning shooter it's pitched as having a like card-based component about like picking stuff up and discarding it. I really think it's a genius move from the lads that developed it, because it's like not especially card-based, but it feels as if they were able to get in on a trend. You know, they could sit on the Steam store page, be like, oh, it's got cards in it, when it really could be anything. I actually think that it's like a really cool thing that developers could learn to do, like to find a thing that's potentially useful that you could get on the back of without actually having to do it. But I'm playing so much of it this weekend, as it's like a time travel time trial speedrunning thing. My Steam friends list is full up with a bunch of games journalists, so I'm sitting at the top of it, because as we all know, games journalists are absolutely terrible at games.
Well, wait, let's see. Maybe I'll pick up this game.
Matt, you said that you just mentioned a minute ago about how, you know, the card element is, you're almost implying that as a good way to sort of advertise it. Like, I disagree. When you when you told me card, that immediately made me switch off. What is
you're
it about
not
the
into
card?
It. Yeah, you've not got on that trend of card games, have
no,
you?
No, but what I'm is it about the card thing that, like, you find appealing? Like, how well does it work in this?
So instead of just like a 3D spinning gun model being on the ground and you picking it up, it is just a, it looks like a card. And it, I guess it does convey a sort of mechanic, because you've got, like, you pick them up and you can use them to shoot, but you can also throw the weapon away to do another ability.
Like Gambit, then, is basically.
Kind of, yeah, exactly. You charge it up. And yeah, so your machine gun, for instance, if you throw it away, it becomes a grenade that you can use to jump on and then get to a higher platform, or also hurt enemies too. So the technique for this as well is that, like, you're trying to time when you're going to throw the weapon away in order to be giving yourself a speed boost in certain areas. And when you first play the level, it kind of guides you visually down a direction where you absolutely don't want to go if you're trying to speedrun it. It's like really creative level design that makes you think that there's one way to complete it, and then the actual way totally different. Yeah, it's very inventive.
Okay. I every time I see a clip from it is one of those where I'm like, I've got to give this a go. I'm not traditionally big into like games where it's all about getting the high score, getting the fastest time. I tend to prefer like more of a single player like story experience. But there's something about this that I look at, I'm like, God, I would love to look that cool. Is it a game where, you know, you think it's quite easy to get good at? Like, is it quite easy to get into, or?
For I'm not hugely big on these kinds of like time trial ones. I do like leaderboard stuff. Like, I mostly play like the Zachtronics stuff that they do, like Infinifactory, stuff like that. Like designing systems that work more efficiently than all of your friends, and they give you leaderboards at the end of it. But this is the first one where I've been like, I know if I just keep repeating this, I can get a time that's better than, you know, anybody else.
There is something about it that's appealing. I'm going to check it out. It's on, I know it's on Steam and Switch. Is that it at the moment, I think?
Good. Yeah, that's where I've heard of it being. But yeah, I think it could be everywhere.
It feels like a good Switch game, but I also imagine having that mouse and keyboard helps a lot with that sort of game.
Also, the surprising thing about this, the lad that is in charge of this, he made that game Donut County before.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gone from that to making some,
it's
like,
a very weird
shooter.
Switch up, isn't it?
Yeah.
When I first saw this game announced, I was like, oh, I thought it was made by the Paradise Killer people, because it has a very similar art style.
It is, absolutely,
that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's got, I'm not normally into that sort of art style, but there's something about this game I want to try. Like I said, I keep saying there's lots of bits about it that normally wouldn't interest me, but then I see it in action, I'm like, yeah, I've got to give this a go.
Matt, how is the music? It feels like a game where music is going to be cool.
I wrote this joke for Twitter. I don't know if I even posted it, but I was like, oh, it's cool that the new Machine Girl album comes with a free game.
Right.
It's so good. Yeah, like, just on its own, it's amazing.
I'm going to try. So how long, like, for someone who's not into score chasing stuff, like, how many levels, like, if you just wanted to play it all through once, do you know how roughly that would take you?
Along with my duties as IGN UK's social coordinator, I also run the How Long to Beat channel.
Oh, there we go.
So I've done a post about this the other day, and I think it's about 5 hours if you just wanted to play.
Okay, that's a lot more than I thought, because some of these levels are literally like 15 seconds long.
True. Yeah, if you didn't really care about trying to complete it, there is a normal, usual path through the level, which you won't find too difficult. Like, if you didn't want to chase the score, you could do it on your first go. So yeah, you wouldn't find it too difficult to get through.
All right, check out Neon White People if you want to get, that sounds like your cup of tea. Another Annapurna banger, it sounds like. They very rarely, if at all, miss. Good stuff. What have we got next? I tell you what we've got next. We've got a game that isn't out until September, I think, in the shape of Evil West. Me and you, Dale, recently got to play a bit of this game.
We did. I haven't watched the gameplay video that's gone out there. I assume it's what we played?
Some of it is. Some of it is not of what we played. Ooh. But if you don't know what Evil West is, then a good place, as Dale just hinted, to check is on IGN. We've got a 10-minute exclusive extended gameplay trailer, which is just basically just 10 minutes of raw gameplay for you to watch. I feel like this one is going to be a bit of a sleeper hit for this year. A lot of people either don't know it exists or maybe remember it being announced and have forgotten about it completely. But I think a lot of it ticks a lot of boxes for a lot of different people. The rough sort of pitch for it would be it's a third-person action story-based game that's kind of trying to thread that needle of like God of War and Devil May Cry action, but in a Western steampunk setting with vampires. There's a lot going on.
I would say that is like the imagine the new latest God of War mixed with Devil May Cry that in terms of combat, and then the presentation is a Western with vampires, and that's kind of what it is. That's what it feels like. That's what it plays like.
It felt very good to play as well. That's the key thing. Like each hit, like I think we remarked on it when we were playing, like each hit in each gunshot just feels good to do. It has that sort of weight that made God of War feel so good in its combat, I feel. And it's like, I'm not going to overhype it. It's not got the same level of polish and same level of style and gameplay that God of War did for me, but this still looks a very, very good game, and I think a lot of people are going to enjoy it.
I think I used the word crunchy several times when we were playing it, but it also has that thing, and bear in mind I've only played about, you know, 10-20 minutes of this. It immediately, and it's something I love in games when they do this, it immediately made me feel powerful and a badass in the game. And I think that's something that has a great value to people who don't necessarily have the time to be the most skilled at a game, but want to look cool and feel cool in a game. And immediately out the gate, I got that vibe, and that's why it immediately caught my interest. And I was like, hang on, this is something that I'm going to be into.
Some of us are just born effortlessly cool, but you need a help.
I need the help, Also, what you alluded to as well, the fact that, like, don't go into this expecting, like, a AAA game, because I don't, not
It's kind of that double A that we're kind of missing.
Well, exactly what was going to be my point. It's like that, I feel like since like the PS3, Xbox 360 era, we've had this sort of missing void between like indie and AAA. And it's just been like, it's one or the other. And this and also like from the same publisher's Focus, Plague Tale, feel like they fit in that somewhere in between, where this is still a very good polished experience, just maybe just shy of the budget, but also super good fun to play.
People were saying that about the last game I can remember anybody saying that about was like Biomutant. That like kind of just okay, like, you know, did what it needed to.
Got a similar sort of thing to that. Looks, maybe looks a lot more polished and plays a lot better than it should do for the budget it's on. And that's good. I feel like Evil West should definitely check out. I think it's just, we haven't mentioned the key point actually, that the whole of that campaign is playable in co-op as well, which is rare to see in like just a 10-hour story game. Imagine if God of War was like co-op, one of you was Atreus, the other one was Kratos.
And you had guns.
And there was vampires and it was set in the West. I'm quite excited about this game. I feel like I'm just going to have, it's one of those I'm going to have a good weekend within a couple of months.
Definitely. I'm very, very excited to play more of this game, actually, which is not something, before we went to Paris to check it out, it's not something I ever thought about. I saw that game and it kind of passed me by a little bit. And when they said, you want to play it, I was like, okay. But then when I started playing, I was like, whoa, it got my attention straight away.
We went to Paris to play a Plague Tale. And it's like, you know, you go to the shops, you're like, I need a good dinner. I'm going to find a good dinner. But then in the corner of your eye, what's that? Chocolate's 2-for-1, well, might as well get some of that. Sort of that, you know, Evil West is the chocolate in that scenario. There's a really, really laboured metaphor.
I was going to say, in that scenario, Plague Tale's also the chocolate, because it was a 2-for-1.
Lots of chocolate. No, it's a tasty meal. That's like, I don't know, a barbecued spatchcock chicken with some dauphinoise potatoes. I don't know.
That sounds good.
It's quite rich like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm not the biggest dauphinoise fan either. I don't know why I picked dauphinoise. But there we go.
Listeners, tune in. Let us know what you feel about potatoes.
What your favorite potato?
What's your favorite form of potato? Are you a simple chip person? You're a potato waffle,
Like a gratin.
Exactly.
My the triple cooked chip fans, shout out. Let us know.
They are good. I am partial. Do you know what? I'm not overly keen on mash, but I do love a croquette.
This is the cake chat from last week.
Do you know what?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not massive on mash, but I do like it. I do like sweet potato mash. I really like sweet potato mash.
Or a carrot and swede mash is also
quite good. Yeah, we got derailed here.
Yeah. Pulped veg. What's your favourite pulped veg? IGN_UK feedback@IGN.com. I should also add there's sort of like Souls-like boss battles in Evil West as well. Not as quite as difficult as any Souls game, but I did beat it on the first
go. I knew that's what you were building up to. Someone in the room going, oh, he's done it.
He's done it first time. He's done it first go. Oh, gotta make that
You
harder,
were playing Elden Ring at the same time when we went to play that
game. I will also add that the build we were playing was an alpha build that didn't have... I play inverted. There was no option to play inverted in that build, and I still did it. So there you go. I am an elite gamer, and Neon White will show every one why. And if you never see me post a clip from that game, it's because I'm shit at it.
You're too good. You don't want to let people in on the strategies.
No, I have a feeling I'll be shit.
That is the conflict that I'm having as well. I want to show off, but I don't want to teach people how it's done because they'll beat
my
score.
You can't give the secrets. Yeah, just post the time, not the run.
That is not the sign of a true master. A true master would share their tricks, but then they develop new tricks afterwards. Come on.
I'm not sure about that. Anyway, let's talk about something that I watched. There's a couple of quick things here that I've been watching and playing, just because, you know, why not share? Here's a recommendation that I actually don't recommend at all. Last week, Spiderhead came to Netflix, the new film from Joseph Kosinski, the director of Top Gun Maverick. He's had a busy year.
He made Top Gun like 2 years ago, didn't he?
Yeah, he filmed that a while ago. But, you know.
And Miles Teller's in it.
It has Miles Teller in as well, and Chris Hemsworth. In theory, you read that director of Top Gun, Miles Teller, Chris Hemsworth, you think, oh, this could be good. Then you read sort of like the synopsis, which is kind of like it's a future sci-fi world where basically prisoners are at this facility on this island called Spiderhead, and basically Chris Hemsworth runs this facility, is doing tests on them to sort of like, he's giving them like basically testing these new drugs to try and send emotions to them. So there's one that, for example, that makes them really excitable and horny, so he gives that to them one time. There's one that, you know, brings out their darkest fear. They turn their testing these like toxins, these drugs out on
it's
people.
Like the opposite of equilibrium.
It's kind of a little bit like that, but there's no action, and you hear all this, and it's kind of got like an Ex Machina, Severance sort of feel, that sort of like clinical sci-fi look and tone to it.
This sounds
and
good so far.
Oh, it sounds brilliant, and then you watch it, and you discover it's just dreadfully dull. It's just, I don't understand how he went from Top Gun Maverick, which is probably the most exciting film I've seen in many years, to this, which is just clinically boring. There's not a lot to it. It's quite, for me, quite a dull sci-fi story. Miles Teller, Chris Hemsworth and the cast, they're all good, but they're not given a lot really to work with. It's set basically in three rooms. There's just not a lot. It's quite boring to look at. There's a few 80s songs they throw in to liven it up.
Does it strike you as one of those like COVID movies, right? They were just like, we have three actors,
feels a bit like that.
And
like,
no budget.
What's the context for the 80s songs? Is it in the 80s?
Not many. No, it's set in the near future, I think. It's got the feel basically of a mid-tier Black Mirror episode that's been strung out into an hour 40 film.
Did you see Windfall as well? Actually?
I did see that. Yes. That was very much, for me, that sort of meh.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I don't know. I sometimes really get on with that, like small cast, like, you know, only a few
I preferred
locations.
Windfall.
Mm-hmm. I got to say, I did find Windfall quite dull.
This is duller. It should be exciting. Everything about it should be exciting, but I don't know. I felt that I was caught for a boring story that I'd kind of seen before. But you know what? Still check it out if you want. Other people like it, I'm sure.
I actually might, because the premise sounds cool enough that, you know, we can have different opinions. I might like it, so I still feel like I want to have a look and see.
Yeah. And there's reviews out there that say it's good. A lot of them are middling, but, you know, it's not a bad film. I've kind of, you know, it's just boring.
All right.
It's just quite, like, there's not a lot to it. I thought maybe I went in expecting more and hoping for more, but I was sadly let down. You know, not everything in life is good. I'll tell you what is good, though. I finally started playing Final Fantasy X, the hot new game on the market.
Why?
Because the last couple of months, I've Basically, ever since Elden Ring, I've been like, I need a new game, and I've just been basically playing Football Manager, FIFA, like, and watching stuff. Like, I've just not played a new game, and this was one I always saw there, and I was like, I've been told I love this game, everything about it I should like, and you know what, I'm 12 hours in now, and I'm having a fantastic time.
Why 10? Is it just because you were recommended that one specifically?
Yeah, I just, Seven, I've tried a lot of times. I could never get properly into it. Okay. I love the remake. 13, I played most of. Like, I'm not a big Final Fantasy. No. I don't have a big history with it. I got halfway through 13. Thought it was okay. I remember at the time thinking it looked incredible.
It's not okay, shite. 15's probably worth a go.
So 15's after 10 for me. But the thing I'm like about 10 is that it's surprisingly a lot more like Persona than I thought it would be. And that's what's getting me into it, I think.
Actually, I'd be interested in that, in you expanding that one, because I don't really get that.
Explain yourself, Simon.
I feel like just more the tone of the group is a lot more like, I feel like they're quite chirpy. I quite like the more modern setting of it, and also the fact that it largely does rely on, for me, the way I'm playing anyway, the summon aspect of it, and you can just play solely as the summon, I feel like, is quite Persona-y. Mm. I'd say it's not that close to Persona, but it's more Persona-y than the other Final Fantasy games I've played, basically.
I think as well, actually, it's got such a like interesting aesthetic design to it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's quite dissimilar to any of the rest of them. Like, this, I call it beach goth. I really thought beach goth would take off more after this game. Like, I thought it would.
I
really
wish it had.
Yeah,
it's almost got. Yeah, I think that's why I'm liking it, because it's not. I'm just not big into the high fantasy stuff when it comes to Final Fantasy. I know a lot of them don't necessarily go that way with it, but this one is much more sort of sci-fi. It is more a bit like Final Fantasy VII.
You say that, but bear in mind, I've not played this game since it very first came out, so it's a very long time ago. But my memory of it was, for the first few hours, you were in a very sci-fi environment, and then you obviously travel to a different world, right?
I'm kind of traveling through. At the moment, I'm just about to travel across, is it Moonglow? Moonflow? I can't remember.
But I remember being disappointed that it didn't maintain the heavy sci-fi stuff, and it went more fantasy.
Well, don't ruin my expectations. No, I'm still enjoying it a lot. It's just nice to... I know there's a lot newer ones I could be playing, but I just fancied a good turn-based RPG. And I feel like having those three Persona games, I know they're coming soon to Game Pass, like going back playing those. I've held off playing those again. I'm going to wait. I just fancied like a good turn-based RPG.
And also,
this is filling the hole.
When you finish it, you got 10-2 to go on to as well.
Exactly. I do have the collection. I'm playing. That's a nice remaster, considering that game's, 21 years old? It looks... Yeah. Looks perfectly
How
good.
Is the voice acting? Because I remember it being bad back then.
Well, I tell you, there's some questionable voices in that game. They would not, if it was made today, Wacka would not be sounding like that. Or performed by Bender from Futurama. Mm. It would not be.
Yeah, but the listeners at home can't see, but I'm pulling my shirt collar up.
I don't think you've got to the laughing scene yet. But have you seen that video?
Oh, I think I have. I think I've got. Yeah.
It's a very
it's fine. Like in the context of the game, I didn't really bat an eyelid. If you know what I mean, I was just like, yeah, this is weird. A bit weird.
Yeah. How much Blitzball are you playing?
Oh yeah,
I played the one game they made me to, and I thought it was urgent stuff, so I haven't gone back. I lost heavily. Didn't really understand the systems. I kind of do, but they also don't really seem to give you a chance at all. But there we go.
Disappointed you skipped over Final Fantasy IX, mate. Which
I might
is
go about one
the best
day,
one.
But that one was not as easily available to me in remastered form.
Sure. It was also very high fantasy for a lot of it. Mm. So yeah, I can imagine being put off immediately with that. But
at the time, though, like that was a departure for the series, because they just had two like modern ones.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. I think if I'm going to do another Final Fantasy after this one, I will give 15 a go finally. Yeah. But I know that one's not turn-based. That's much more like Final Fantasy VII in its combos.
It's going to be like, well, that's what 16's like as well, right? You just control one character, namely the legend Clive in Final Fantasy 16.
You're really annoyed about this.
I'm fucking
don't think
well
Clive
annoyed,
is a good
mate.
Name, do they? What? Give listeners some context. Why can Clive not be a hero's name?
No, I'm saying it can be a hero's name. It's people. Oh, it's other people saying it can't.
Yeah, everyone's having a go at Clive.
Yeah. So for context, like, I don't think I've ever said it on the podcast before, my middle name is Clive. It is my dad's name as well. My dad is
and he's your hero.
He's absolutely my hero. He's a legend.
And he has a massive sword and fights. Yeah,
he has massive hammers, not swords.
there we go.
Clive is a good name, and I like it because it's different, and it, you know, it catches your ear, and everyone, all this Clive slander needs to stop. Everyone get on board with Clive as a hero.
There, yeah, no one had a go. No one said, "Oh, Clive Owen, he's not a tough nut," did they?
Mad. I honestly saw someone on the internet saying Squall was a better name. I was like, "Fuck off, Squall."
That's a bit of water.
I do think Tidus is quite a good name, though. I'm into that.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know,
what's Tidus's like bodyguard mate called? The one with, like, I think he's got one arm in like a
Auron.
Oh, Auron. Yeah, he's cool.
Yeah,
he is cool. Do you know that there was that tweet that was going around the other day that was like, Auron has this like world weary, tired of it all persona, and he's only 35.
Jesus.
And when you were 15, that made sense. Yeah. And when you were 25, it didn't make any sense. And when you're 35, makes total sense again.
Yeah, he's a young pup to me.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, everyone lay off Clive.
Yeah.
Who's your favourite Clive? Send it into IGN_UKfeedback@IGN. You're not called Clive.
It's my middle name. How is it? It's one of my names.
I'm just imagining now you've got one of those big like almost like tribal style tattoos across your back that just says Clive.
No.
And I think you should.
To be fair, I hated it when I was younger, but now I'm like, I'm wearing
into Clive.
Wear it with honor.
It's one of those names that suits an older person. Oh, yeah. Like, you know, like baby Clive is a bit weird.
That is weird, yeah. I'm glad my mum managed to persuade him not to have it as my first name. I don't know if that was ever the intention.
Yeah.
You'd be Clive the second.
Clive exactly. Jr.
And that is a fun. If they added the second, then everyone would think Final Fantasy 16 sounds brilliant. There we go. Why don't we move on? Why don't we play a bit of The Endless Search?
Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we're coming through. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it in the search?
Right, we've got a quiz this week that is not the infamous unnamed Metacritic IMDb game. Yeah, we're changing it up. Although, I must say, I read a feedback. I don't think it's been read out. I'm sorry, I apologise to whoever sent it in, but someone submitted the name IMDBS, and I was like, that's kind of good. That works.
isn't that like a DBS check to see if you've, like,
there's
done
DBS
crimes.
If you're allowed to work with children, yeah. Mm. But I'm not thinking that. I've had one of those. I passed it, by the way.
Oh, nice.
I mean, yeah. If, I don't think you'd be telling this if you hadn't.
I had one. I failed it.
Failed it, actually.
No, yeah. IMDB, but also BS, because it's bullshit that they write. I thought that was pretty good.
There you go.
Right, let's get to this week's game. This is sent in by Jack Lewis, and Jack Lewis says, "Hi all, I've come up with a game called Film Stat Showdown. Feel free to come up with a better name." No, we're not starting another one of those. We've already got a hard enough time deciding the name for this one. Right. To play, the host will need IMDb open and ready to search for films. Next, they will suggest a film statistic to the player, such as, name a film that was made with a budget of 20 million. The two players then each name a film. Whoever's film is closest to the stat, as listed on their film's IMDb page, gets the point. Simple. And now Jack suggested several categories, which I've chosen five of. So let's go for it. I should probably open IMDb before we get started. So I'm ready to go with the searches.
Some good guessing going on here, basically.
So the first one, we need one film each, and whoever gets closest gets the point. And... Ooh. The category is a film released in the UK in July 1994.
Are we taking turns? Or as soon as we've got one, do we say it?
Let's take turns because there might be some where there's an obvious answer.
Yeah.
So, Cardi, you go first on this one.
So, I'm thinking some sort of summer blockbuster. I'm racking my brains to think which of those would come out in 1994. I don't know why I'm walking through the process here.
You can, like, any... it's about closest, right? So if one of you said one in 95, but the other one said one in 97, then the 95 would win.
Well, I'm pretty sure I know a 1994 summer blockbuster, so I'm going to go with that, and I'm going to go with Speed.
Speed, okay. met me. Matt,
that's a cracking film, isn't it? Speed.
While I'm looking that up, Matt, do you want to suggest yours?
I don't know why this came to mind, but I've got a feeling. Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, that is I believe that's a 1994 film. They'll both be summer films. I was going to say summer flings, but you know.
Okay, so I've got Speed's one. Bear me, I'm being slow. Ooh, here.
That's going to be close.
Yeah, I feel like it is going to be really close. Oh, okay, I've got them. Right.
This is tense.
So Speed was June. Super close. Dumb and Dumber was December.
I thought it was a summer film.
Yep.
There we go.
Feels like a summer film, but...
Still 1994 though, right?
Apparently not.
I think they were both good shouts. There we go.
Right, next one. 1 point to Cardi. Second category is a film that was made with a budget of 85 million.
Matt goes first.
Matt, you're first.
Grown Ups 2. Because okay. I know that they're like drastically over budget for what they get.
I'm trying to think. Cause it's got... You don't say two...
It's Grown Ups 2.
Like, you're talking over 100 million for like big sci-fi, so I'm not going to go that route with it. I'm going to go saying a big film that wasn't sci-fi, that maybe had some stars in it. I'm trying to think.
Feel free to take your time because I'm struggling to find where the budget is.
I think they normally list it in like the box office section.
Ah, yes, got it. Yeah.
I'm gonna go with I'm just gonna pick a random film that I like. Inglourious Bastards.
I think it's gonna be over.
It probably is over, but I'm hoping not by too much. We're not in a like a whatchamacallit Price is Right scenario here, are we? If you go over, you lose.
Couple of good guesses here, guys. Very close. Well, close enough. So Matt, you said Grown Ups 2, surprisingly. We're looking for 85, and Grown Ups 2 was 80. So
that seems very good.
Cardi, you said Inglourious Bastards. Inglourious Bastards, surprisingly, was 70 million.
That feels
really cheap.
They're having the last laugh because I bet that made more money.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, we can look at that. It's in
but
dollars.
I'm losing the game.
So 120 million. Oh, sorry. Worldwide was 321 for Inglourious Bastards. And
deserve more.
I would actually. Do you know what? Grown Ups is probably one of those films that did like.
I've never watched it. To be fair,
I bet it's on telly more often as well.
Yeah. It's probably on every streaming platform as well. I've lost the box office. 246 for Grown Ups.
Oh, there we go.
So Inglourious Basterds has made more.
All right, they were both happy with that outcome.
Yeah.
There we go.
All right, next one. Name a film rated 7.4 on IMDb. As close as
is where a film that's I'm going to go with the route of a film that I think's very good that some people probably underrate, and there's a lot of those. I just got to pick a film.
That's part of the game.
I'm going to look around my room. I'm going to look on my DVD. I'm going to look at my Blu-rays over there. Minority Report. Let's go with that.
That's good.
That should be in the eights.
I love that
but
film.
It's probably not.
I think it's massively underrated, that film. Okay, I nearly said it out loud there. Okay, Matt, what's your suggestion?
Like Ant-Man.
Okay.
Ooh, that's Ant-Man. Probably because Marvel ones are always up a bit higher than you think, I think.
Okay, this is a good one.
Ooh.
So, Cardi... You said
what
Minority
are we aiming for again?
7.4. Okay. Cardi, you said Ant-Man. No, sorry, you said Minority Report. 7.7. So 0.3.
Still too low for Minority Report.
Yeah, that is. And Matt, you said Ant-Man. Ant-Man was 7.3. So you were 0.1 off. Nice.
What's going on here?
Okay, so we've got two more categories. It's currently 2-1 to Matt. The next one is name a film ranked at 300 in IMDb's popularity.
So that's not the top 250. That's like current, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
What's the current?
Yeah. So like current, like for example, I've got Ant-Man open right now and it says it's 1,147th.
And this is like out of ratings, right? Like,
yeah. So the overall scores of IMDb, what is rated the three? Well, close to.
But like that's like trend. It's almost like what's trending 300, isn't it? I don't know. It's not me first.
Oh, sorry, yeah, it's you first.
I think Arrival.
Okay, Arrival. That feels like a good shout.
Yeah, it's like it's good. It's not, you know, it's not within the top 100.
But... okay, I've got a number for Arrival.
What's a film?
What's a film with you?
I think it's something that came out like last year. What would have been? Maybe. I'm going to still say it's popular. I'm going to go with Spider-Man No Way Home. I'm going to say it's still...
I think that'll be too high.
It may well be. I have no idea how the popular... I don't know how frequently this is updated. I don't know.
Jesus. Sorry.
It's probably like top 10, isn't it?
That's a surprising one. Okay, so yeah, kind of spoiler them there. Spider-Man No Way Home is 39. Yeah. That is not the 39th best film. I suppose in popularity terms, though.
Yeah. But if Matt's 1,000 out, I win.
So Matt, you were 580. You were.
Oh, there
so
we go.
Matt, that's... you just win it. I think it's we're actually a lot closer than it looks on paper.
Does he? I think.
Wait, no, because it was 300.
Oh, yeah, right? I win it. But yeah, I lose by 7. No.
What, 180 what did you say? I was 30? To 171. Yes, Akadi, you win it. No, wait.
Yeah.
Is that right?
No, just a minute. What? 161. Where was I 39th?
Yeah.
Yeah, I win it then. Yeah. No, by 19. Wait.
39, 300, 261, right?
Yeah. Anybody who's any good at that.
And then 280.
And that was 280. Yes, you're right. Yeah, yeah. Sorry. Sorry. The mass, the pressure got to me. right. Okay.
Come on now. What's this?
That was good anyway, because that means we're two all now. One to
it does. That makes it exciting.
Oh, I threw that on purpose.
And anything could be next. Yeah. God knows what stat it is.
So... I'm just checking
a film with five chimpanzees in it.
It's not that obtuse, I'm afraid. Name a film with a runtime of 2 hours and 10 minutes.
Oh, am I first?
You are first.
Because I think I know one that might be bang on that.
Oh, he's flexing. Oh,
Top Gun Maverick.
Okay.
It's very close to that if it's not exactly that. Because
I
feel like even in the office we talked about it being 2 hours and 10 minutes as well. So,
done a lot of work on this film. Well,
Matt, what have you got?
Oh God!
I have a backup if it is as a tiebreaker.
Gladiator.
Okay.
I feel that's longer.
Yeah, I think you might be right
there. I'd guess 2 hours 25 for Gladiator.
Okay. Right, so Gladiator is 2 hours 35.
Mm.
Oh. Top Gun Maverick, 2 hours 10 minutes.
Oh, wow.
He wins with a flourish.
Yeah.
I think you should actually get a bonus point. It's meaningless because you win anyway.
Yeah,
I think the bonus is we get to talk about Top Gun Maverick again. Oh, God, that's
what
a good
movie.
And
Dale, get yourself sorted out and see Top Gun Maverick.
Do you know there's a bit where Miles Teller hits his head at the top of
the
point?
Yeah,
I've heard about it.
They left it in.
Also, Jack finishes. Thank you, Jack, for sending that in, by the way.
I enjoyed it.
He finishes off by saying, "P.S. On the off chance you do play this, which we did, can I also request the theme from Grandstand at the end of the episode? Music? It's a banger.
Why not?
Consider it done.
Yeah. Grandstand theme is a banger.
I always get that and Ski Sunday mixed up.
And Black Beauty. They all kind of blend.
Almost definitely done by the same band.
Yeah.
Right, let's go on to some feedback then. I think, Matt, you've got the first one up here.
Do I?
It's on the document, mate.
In the doc.
We've got a fresher.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't know there was a second page.
Oh, it scrolls.
Oh, nice. Oh, it scrolls. Okay, this one comes in from Kieran. Do I say the full name? Is that like a...
You can if you want. We're not doxing anyone.
I'm just going to say Kieran.
There we go.
On the subject of AWOL game series. Hi. Mm. Long first. Where the F are they now? F-Zero... and Wave Race. C, in it. Kind regards, Kieran.
Eloquently put there, clear, right?
Yeah. F-Zero and Wave Race. Not two series I have any great love for. I feel like you might, Matt, considering your trombone love, maybe there's a bit of F-Zero or Wave Race in you.
I think that like the F-Zero music is really fantastic,
mm-hmm.
but I've got no real affinity for the series at all. Like, I realise the importance, but yeah, it's not really my thing.
Kind of think there's just like... those sort of games now, there's so many equivalents, right? if you want a good racing game, there's loads of options out there. We don't need F-Zero and Wave Race necessarily.
Yeah, sorry. Rejected, Kieran. Rejected. It's not coming back.
With the advancements in water physics, though, it would be really cool to have like a boat, like a really good boat racing game, like a speed boat. That would be pretty sick.
Yeah, there's not really... I mean, the closest you get these days are probably playing GTA Online.
Yeah.
Any good water-based racing games out there, send them to IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com. I've got an email here. One here that I'm sure Dale's going to love listening to. So
honestly, I read this email come in and I was like, I don't want to read this out because it'd be
I wasn't
going to
make you read it out. I have some questions for you. This is from Thomas Plant. He says, hi all, long time listener, second time writing in. A few small things I wanted to mention. I finally caught up with Dale's Dittman video. That's the one on the Resident Evil glitch, if you didn't know about that. Which I saved my phone notes back in March. Oh, it was worth the wait, though, wasn't it? There we go. It was fantastic and really interesting. I had no idea about this glitch or even much about Resi speedrunning in general. How much time did you dedicate to working on this video, Dale? And Dale, do you have any similar videos you're currently working on?
Didn't this sound like something like I've written?
I'm doing an interview.
Yeah, this is a plug for the video.
Yeah.
We're trying to get the views on that one up.
Thomas, is Thomas Plant an anagram of Dale Driver? No, it is not.
Thomas, thank you very much. If you do have questions, like feel free to like DM me or message me instead of doing it on a podcast. It might be
more people might want to hear.
Well, it's a bit self-indulgent, isn't it? But I would say how much time did I dedicate to it? I was working on it for about a year on and off. Not like every day, just when I had time to do it. But I first reached out to Dittman a good 7 months before I actually finished it. So these things take a while, trying to find these people. And similar videos, yes, a couple of ideas. That's all I can really say.
Ooh, there we go. It's all right. You can be self-indulgent, you know. Everyone watched my Top Gun Maverick video. You know. Everyone else has already, so you know.
All right.
More people caught up. there's more, though, from Thomas. He's got a game here that I've actually... It does ring a bell, but I never played. He writes in about an old mobile game, originally on iPhone, called One Single Life. It's around 10 years old, I believe, but I remember how original it was back then. In short, you controlled a character who ran across the screen at increasing speed and then had to tap the screen just before the end of the roof to jump across to the next roof. This got steadily harder until you most likely failed and fell to your death. The point of this being, you only had one life. The game was over, and any time you rebooted it, you were still dead. One way around this was to uninstall the game, then reinstall. There was an extra life hidden behind, which I eventually found in the end credits, where you could jump to different clouds and eventually end up back in the game for one last attempt. Have you played anything similar to this kind of idea? That's Thomas's question. Then he says he loves the podcast. That's very nice. Thank you, Tom. Respect the gravediggers. Respect the bloody sea. And all who almost drowned in it. And finally, thank you for being epic. I won't go that far, but I'll take it. And he also says he hails from Birmingham, in brackets. Someone has to live there. Sorry, not my opinion. I don't mind Birmingham. You don't like Birmingham, do you, Dale?
Only because I grew up somewhere very close to it and there's an inherent rivalry there. But yeah.
You once told me the bull ring should be burnt down, is what you said.
I said the bull ring, more like the bull bag, is what I said.
No. God. Big words.
Before you answer his questions, I just want to confirm something. Matt, do you respect gravediggers and the sea?
I have no reason to cross them.
Good answer. Yeah, good answer. Cool. I feel like I have heard of this game. I don't think I ever played it.
There were a couple that have used this like technique. Like there was there was one called The Passage by Jason Roa. It's like an indie about like just walking from like the left to the right and like you know, you grow up, you get married, you know, a bunch of other stuff, and then you die, and it's only like a minute long basically,
and that makes life go by so much quicker as well. We have to do that over the course of what, 70 80 90 years?
Yeah,
if we're lucky.
It's inefficient, it so much really
easier. I know.
There was another one as well called One Chance, I think. It was like a Newgrounds thing. But it was about you attempting to prevent some disease from taking over the world.
Okay.
And if you spend too much time on the research, then your family life falls apart.
That sounds about right, yeah.
But the world survives. But if you spend too much time with your family, then, you know, everybody dies.
Tough weighing up that. I don't know what I do. It feels like the sort of game that, like I said, works well on browser or mobile because you're not paying for it necessarily. Yeah. Like, imagine if you paid 60 quid for Elden Ring and you die once and then that's it. Can't play it again.
Kojima was giving it that like 20 years ago. He was like, I'm going to make a full price game that you can only play once.
Of course he did.
But is that good, or is that just like a eye-catching gimmick? You know, like, is it fun? Like, I suppose the amount of stress levels that will come over you while you're playing that game, I guess. But it doesn't sound like it's
there are
fun.
Like permadeath games, aren't there? Like, you can play, like, for example, you can play The Last of Us 2 in lots of games, to be fair, in permadeath mode. It's just like, that's it, you're done. To me, that's the opposite of how I want to play games.
But I played Dead Space 2, where I think it was a mode where you only get free saves and that's it. And then that is fun, but I still had those free saves, you know? Like, it's there was still,
you can basically get free lives.
I still a chance.
Did you know the game well by that point when you were playing it?
Oh yeah. Or... it's on the free lives thing is on the hardest version of it. So I'd already played it for a couple of times.
I suppose that was how games used to work. Like, when I first played games on the NES, like, you know, Mario, if you died, that was it. Game over, start again from the very beginning.
Yeah, like, but you could also finish those games in like 40 minutes. And they weren't 8, 9, 10 hours long, you know, and more.
Yeah. Interesting topic there. Thank you, Thomas. Right. I've got one last email, and it's a very important one, Dale.
Right. This is from Matt, and he says, you want to know my favourite cake? Fine. Call me a basic bitch all you want. I don't care. The only cake I ever want is a chocolate cake with chocolate frosting. It's what I wanted on my birthday every year. You can make it from a box of cakes mix. You can grab the frosting off the shelf. I don't care. Chocolate, that's my cake. Gratitude to the gravediggers. Respect the sea. Revere the sky, Duncan, and all that jazz.
I was needlessly aggressive, but, you know, it's chocolate cake, so I kind of understand. I have nothing against you wanting chocolate cake, Matt. If you want to eat chocolate cake, eat it. It's not the best.
I would say definitely not the best. Like, it's too much chocolate. I need a mix. I need a balance. I like a layer of chocolate, but I don't want it all
I do
chocolate.
Like a chocolate fudge cake, but like hot with ice cream.
Oh, that is good, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you guys got any favourite cakes you want to mention?
I hoped that you would ask.
Waiting, begging that you would ask.
I remember the pub that I used to run for a little while. There was a cafe right next door that did an amazing red velvet with like way too much of the like cream cheese stuff on top of it. Absolutely beautiful. I think about it all the time.
I'm going to cheat, but not cheat, and say... cheesecake.
I mean, it is a top cake. Yeah. It is a top cake.
It feels like it's not a cake, but it's in the name, so it's fucking
cake. Do you know what I've got in the fridge right now is one of those Lotus Biscoff cheesecakes.
Oh, yes, please.
Oh. Don't mind if I do.
All for me. It's not all for me, sadly.
We've started buying a Biscoff spread, which is...
it's dangerous.
It is, yep. It's like a time bomb just sitting in your closet, in your kitchen.
All Americans might turn their nose up at this, but when I'm in America, Cheesecake Factory is an absolute go-to.
I have been once. It was, you know, the food itself was...
Oh, forget the food.
Mediocre.
I'm there for the cheesecake. Me and my wife went, when we were on our honeymoon, we went to the Cheesecake Factory for food, thought it was terrible, but we had the dessert. We liked it so much every night. Whatever restaurant we went to, we would leave and go to Cheesecake Factory to get dessert on the way back. Mm-hmm. Just have a different one every time. Amazing place. We need it in the UK. Give
me. There we go. Let's start that petition. Cheesecake Factory in the UK now. Thank you for listening. It's the end of the podcast if you're not interested or haven't watched Obi-Wan Kenobi, because from here on in, we're going to have a little section where we talk about what we thought of the finale, what we liked, maybe what we didn't. So here's a little bit of Star Wars music that I'm sure Dale's gonna splice.
I thought
we
got to put Grandstand in.
That's for the very end. Or do we put it now? Because then if you're not,
we do Obi-Wan. Do
you put Grandstand now? Yeah. So okay, Grandstand now, and I'm gonna somehow smoothly transition into Obi-Wan Kenobi from Grandstand. Hello there. That's why I'm not playing Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Did a dialect coach teach you how to do that?
Yeah.
Like, that's the only reason he's not playing Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Can't grow a beard either, actually. So that's another one. Everything else. Got it. I really enjoyed Obi-Wan Kenobi in the end, especially that last episode. Mm. I know maybe everyone's not as hot on it as me, but... I really, really liked it. I thought it was... That last episode is kind of what I had in my head this show would be when they first announced it. I thought the fight scene between Vader and Anakin was really well done.
Vader and Anakin? Wow, I didn't see that one.
That's true. It is actually thematically.
Oh, yes, there we go.
Yeah. It's a bit of a Freudian slip there. But there you go. Between Obi-Wan and Vader, even. Yeah, I really liked it. I do think, and I've written my full season review of the show. That should be up by the time this is released. And I do, yeah, I do think the script does let it down a lot of times because I think the core is there for it to be a good show. I think the themes they were trying to get to were good, but the script does let it down sometimes. Sometimes the action lets it down. I think the lightsaber fights in general have been very good, but outside of that, so we talked already about the laughable chase scenes and some of the shootouts not being very good. But yeah, overall, I really enjoyed it. I thought like it was a worthwhile TV show. I learned more about Obi-Wan and Leia's relationship, which is something you never really get in the films. No. So yeah, I feel like it deepened that. And yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I largely want to echo what you said. Like, I think the last episode, I thought the Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Vader stuff was like superb. Like, I really, really enjoyed it. It felt like the natural evolution from Revenge of the Sith to A New Hope of where their relationship was going. I thought it was fantastic. I thought the stuff with his mask being split open and then the voice changing between Hayden Christensen and James Earl Jones, like, amazing stuff. Like, fantastic show. I guess my issue with the show, and it's not an original opinion because I've seen people on the internet saying, but I agree with it, is the idea that this feels like four episodes or a movie as opposed to a six-episode show. You know how they released that Clone Wars movie?
Yeah.
And it was several episodes of the Clone Wars stitched together and put out as a movie. It feels like the opposite of that. It feels like this was a movie that they've padded out to make into six episodes.
I feel like there was maybe a bit too much in there for it to be one movie. I do feel like a TV show was kind of right for it, but I do agree there's some, they could have streamlined it. I like the Reva stuff in principle and the Inquisition stuff. I do feel like it gets muddled in with the Obi-Wan and Vader stuff, whereas it feels like there's like two good ideas for a show here.
Sure.
They've kind of been melded into one, and neither really. I think the Obi-Wan and Vader stuff in the end does give you what you want, but like Reva's storyline, like, in no part down to the actress, or I should say, like, there's some ridiculous stuff been said about her. Like, she's very good at what she needs to do.
Absolutely.
Like, just her story isn't given. It's a very predictable story. It's not fleshed out enough. Like, and it's a very predictable arc, I think, which is a bit disappointing.
I don't know that I buy it at the end, where she's like, oh, I can't kill Luke, but I was perfectly happy to kill Leia up until I had to walk away and have a different meeting.
I find the whole thing with her and Luke completely contrived at the end. It was the one thing I didn't like about the final episode. None of that made sense to me. And also from a drama perspective, it was ultimately useless, because not for one second did we think anything was really, any major consequences going to happen there. So
it's
almost felt like it had
prequel problem, isn't
it? Yeah, but like almost the, like, this felt like it had no power whatsoever. Like when she approached Luke, and they literally had a scene where she's carrying him and they were acting like, is he dead or not? I was like, this carries no weight whatsoever.
If they'd done a body swap or something, the Luke we knew for all time was someone completely different.
Like a Metal Gear Solid 5 sort of ending.
This Luke had all the recessive genes.
Yeah. No, I think that part of it led down. Like, and again, I want to be clear. I think this is a really good show. I think it's the best. It's the best Disney and Marvel, sorry, Star Wars and Marvel show that I think of. Seen on Disney Plus, I think. Maybe Mandalorian was like, probably maybe people think that's better. I think I enjoyed this more. I think it could have been a really good film, especially in considering if it was a film, I feel like the production value would have been higher. And I feel like they could have splashed out a bit more on locations and sets, because it was a lot of barren land that we dealt with in that show.
Yeah, like I've written on my preview, I think it had a hard job. It does have that problem of trying to invent Jeopardy, whereas we know 9 out of 10 of those characters are surviving. But it's ultimately, I think it knows that, and it's not trying to often think, make you think these people are going to die. It is more interested in developing those relationships and those characters, and the stuff with, especially with Leia and Obi-Wan, I think is great. Like, it shows a side to Obi-Wan, like a real tender side we haven't seen. And yeah, I feel like it doesn't really betray what the prequels did with Obi-Wan and Anakin, but also builds on what is to come in A New Hope, and you understand more why Leia is asking for Obi-Wan Kenobi. I've seen a lot of people like nitpicking, and it's like, oh, this now makes no sense. This now makes no sense. It's like, people weren't doing that back in 1977 saying, oh, well, that's a plot hole. That doesn't make sense. It's like, just, I think some people just need to enjoy it, like sit back and enjoy it a bit.
I feel that about myself sometimes. Sometimes I find myself nitpicking it and just, I've got to try and check myself and say, look, this is, you know, this is a, ultimately it's a children's
fantasy
product.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. That's what, I've got swords that glow, right?
Exactly. Like, but it's something, if this series had come out when I was 10, I'd be rewatching that Vader and Anakin fight at the end so much.
I'm tempted to. I was thinking about rewatching it again last night as well. I didn't, but I probably will tonight, just because, yes, like you said, the child inside me like really wants to see those things again.
And some of that dialogue wasn't top notch, but again, when you're 10, 11, are you really going, well, that dialogue was a bit off?
No, I get that argument, but I'm also saying, like, just because something is primarily for children doesn't mean we can't put more work into it to make it more.
Ultimately, did enjoy it. Yeah,
we like applicable. We like video games, so
toys. Yeah, I think I think for me it was like a 90% there of being a really good product. Mm. It was just that 10% that really niggled on me a little bit, and I think with a bit more attention to a bit more care, it could have been there, or a bit more financial investment.
I think,
as well.
Yeah, again, referring to my season review, that's what I've written. Like, it needed like one or two more passes on the script and a bit of streamlining, and it could have been something really great. Like really great.
I would say the secondary characters were all pretty dull. Like, I can't remember the guy's name. The guy who's like the resistance guy who's just hanging out. Begins with an R. What's his name? Like Regan or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. He wasn't a lot. Like, Kamal Nanjiani just kind of comes and goes.
Well, he was. Oh, this guy's an antagonist, and then and then at the end of this episode, he's like, I trust you with my life or whatever. And it's like, I didn't feel
it
like
was
that
the,
relationship
the
was
writing thing of we need to just condense the amount of characters that we've got. Can we just bring Kamal back for this episode?
Yeah, it did feel like that.
I also felt there was a bit in this episode where he was like, oh, I've got to go so that he can have time to fix the engine. He's like, he's not fixing the engine now. He's sat in a room with you.
They did feel like a lack of jeopardy in that vehicle when they were being fired on by a Star Destroyer, where they're all just having very slow conversations.
It's that thing of like, and you can point back, exactly the same thing happens in A New Hope, like a Star Destroyer with loads of TIE fighters loaded is just slowly chasing this ship that it could easily take down. But they're ultimately trying to board them, aren't they? Take them. They're not trying to destroy everyone on that ship. But yeah, I ultimately thought it was very good.
Again, nitpicking, I understand. Ultimately, I thought this is like, compared to like Boba Fett, these are worlds apart. Like, how good this was, like, really, like, sort of invigorated the Star Wars
child. Ewan McGregor is so good.
Yes.
Like, he like, drives that thing by himself, really. And they've already had talks about, oh, we'd love to do another season. It's like, there's no need. There's no need now. I don't think they struggled to tell much of a story in this that wasn't just character building, really. Like, unless they have something really incredible. Like, the Luke and Leia stuff, you've got to leave that now. You can't bring them back into it. Like it ends with basically Obi-Wan going off into that valley and going, right, here's me for the next 10 years.
Well, I was
going
to say, it loses its power if he goes off on a load more adventures and meets up with Vader a bunch of times. It's like,
well, I feel like that's got to be it.
They described that somebody in one of the other channels at work was saying that the goggles that he's wearing at the end is an implication that he's about to go and do the rest of his adventures from the comics, because that's what he looks like in those.
Okay.
So that like the show, it has some imagery and some characters that I'm going to be thinking of, like, as shorthand for basically the rest of my life. But it's the connecting stuff, like, you know, it does feel stretched out, but there are really core key moments in this that seem, like, really important. Like, even, like, you know, Freck, the Zach Braff character I'm going to be thinking about that, like, sniveling, like, you know, bootlicker like archetype for the rest of my life.
Okay.
Oh, and also, I would be remiss in not mentioning 4 letters, 2 words, Ned B. Oh, hey, classic Star Wars character.
Are you the only person I've heard that loves Ned B?
I couldn't even remember his name until you pointed out.
He's gone forever.
He's going to hit that stormtrooper with a hammer. He's,
he's no Babu Frick, is he? Come on, mate. Let's be real.
Clive with his hammers.
It's the 1 and 2 best Star Wars characters.
The ultimate legend of the universe, Babu Frick.
I actually really liked how they did the lightsaber duels in this as well. I thought they found a really nice balance. And actually, they were mostly very well shot and just do every start, do every lightsaber fight either in smoke or in like darkness, because it looks so much cooler.
Yeah. It's fun than as just well broad daylight. Thinking about the lightsaber turning off as like, you know, going stealth mode. Like you can't, I'm literally not projecting light, so you can't see me. It's just a cool use of it.
I feel like with this show as well, they also delivered on like childhood fantasies, like things when I was a kid, and what I'd think about what you could do with the
like
Force.
Vader snapping your neck. Well, that was a childhood fantasy.
Oh, yeah. But I'm more specifically thinking of when he caught the ship from taking off and pulled it back down. Yeah. Like stuff like that, that I would always imagine as a kid being told about what this Force is, but never see on film. Mm-hmm. It had a lot of that. And yes, it as much as things annoyed me, it filled me with a lot of like childhood
joy. Delivers
a
lot of it delivers a lot of what people wanted, I think, which is, it's ultimately a good thing. And he said hello there again, which I'll let them off. Even the, I think it did, it was very restrained, especially as Disney Plus shows go, at being fan servicey and lots of cameos. It didn't really do much of that for a large portion of its run. It allowed itself a bit at the end with the hello there and the Qui-Gon. I was perfectly happy with that Qui-Gon there. I thought it was
fine.
It was timely. It was fine. And Liam Neeson, you know, you can never have enough Liam Neeson, can you? So
did he like? Is it my imagination? Because I haven't watched like prequels in a while, Phantom Menace in a while. Did he sound way more Northern Irish this time than he did?
I haven't examined it. Yeah,
I just I heard his voice.
I'm
was
not
like,
doing the voice this time.
Yeah, so I can't be asked. Who cares?
Nah, it was all good. I was just glad. I thought they were going to do something mad, and like Maul would turn up with his spider legs. I'm glad they didn't go that direction with it.
But, God, do you remember when Darth Maul was at the end of Solo?
Solo, that went nowhere, didn't it? That'll come back at some point. Isn't, what's her name? Emilia Clarke.
Yeah.
Isn't she in she's in one of the things coming up. Is she in Andor? She's in one of them.
Oh, that sounds like it makes sense, being in Andor.
We're playing a game now, which is, which series is Mace Windu going to show up again? Like, it will happen. I was like, would it be this? I thought it might be.
Nah, he's gone. Surely he's gone.
They will do it.
To be fair, it would look more normal him being his age now, dressed up as Mace Windu, than it did of Hayden Christensen dressing up as a Padawan Anakin, which looked bizarre.
He looked about 50.
He did. He looked like an old man cosplaying as him.
Anyway, Obi-Wan was good. I think we can agree. I'll probably miss him. Oh, well. I like Ewan McGregor. Why is Ewan McGregor not doing more stuff? Get him doing more stuff. He's doing a lot of adverts on TV.
He's doing
his
thing.
There we go. He's doing his thing. And we're going to do our thing and go away. Thank you for joining me, lads. Good first episode, Matt. Congrats.
Cheers.
Everyone go play trombone and have a wonderful weekend. Goodbye.
Bye.
See ya.
Stranger, I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.